Hi. Good to see all of you today. Good to have you here. Hope you're looking for a blessing. And we're going to study some things this morning that will help us to understand the New Age movement that we're going to talk about for the next few weeks. We won't talk about it a long time. I'm determined to get through these terms and other things this morning that we need to deal with so that we can get into other discussions about the New Age movement for 2 or 3 weeks and then get on with some other things. Okay? A couple of things I want to mention to you this morning of a sad note that I've been notified about this week. Most of you know Ruth Moore, and we've been praying for her for some time. She's been in a nursing home down in Hartsville, or Bishopville, on the other side of Columbia. I did not receive notification of this. Someone saw the obituary in the newspaper. She was buried yesterday at 3 o'clock. And her family, we did not know her family, of course. We only knew her. She was a precious lady, 79 years old, from Cleveland, South Carolina. She joined our church several years ago after hearing us on the radio, and had come until her health broke, and she was unable to do so. Precious, dear lady, and many of you know her, of course, and she's now gone to be with the Lord. And then yesterday's mail brought this to us. It was a real shock. We leased this building from Bernhard Industries, and the man that we have negotiated our lease with over the years has been a fellow named Bob Smoke, and Bob Smoke went to be with the Lord this week. Died unexpectedly of a heart attack. I would assume it's a heart attack. He died on Thursday, January the 9th, and has been buried now. Just saddened for his family. Want to be praying for him. I want to write a letter this week to both of these families expressing our condolences. But I wanted you to know about those two things. Bob Smoke, he was a Methodist, but had a good testimony. And he was a good man. Had a real witty sense of humor. Boy, talk about a fellow could drive a hard bargain. I always enjoyed getting together with him, trying to renegotiate the lease. And I thought we'd turn back the clock, and here we were at some old open door or open air market, you know, negotiating over the price of a chicken or something. I mean, the way we would dicker and barter about this building, give and take, back and forth. And the last time we met was back in the fall, right back there in the foyer. And I was going to try to ask him for a bunch of things, and I said, "Well, let me take you to lunch." And no, let's just stand right here, get this worked out. You know, he knew what I was trying to do, and I'd ask him for something, he'd ask me for something back, and finally he says, "Well," he said, let's just shake on it right here." And I said, "Well, now I got to talk to my men." "Well, I know if you'll talk to them, they'll see it your way." And he just, I mean, that was the kind of a fellow he was, and I really enjoyed his company, and I'm going to miss him. And so we'll write to his family this week and try to be an encouragement to them. I don't think he was an elderly man, maybe early 60s, but he evidently was taken suddenly. So I want you to be praying for his family, if you would. Then I have another little note here I'll read in church from Do Swan Mung. We had a good love offering for him, $330, I believe it was, on Wednesday night. What a blessing he was. Boy, what boldness to obey the Lord. Those of you who are not here, here's a fellow from Burma, a closed mission field. And it's interesting how the Lord gives you connections to people. The next day, I went into my office and was reading through the missionary prayer letters, and there was a section in Jerry Mattson's prayer letter about how he had worked with the same man and how thankful he was for him. Jerry meets a lot of Burmese merchant seamen there on his work with the men in the ships at Chesapeake, Virginia. And he knows Do Swan Mung. Moong, I'm sorry. Moong is the way you pronounce it. M-O-O-N-G is the way it's pronounced. But speaks highly of him as a good man. All right, before we get into these terms, this is not going to be a rabbit trail. I'm just going to show this to you. Ted Harris shared this with me in our deacons meeting yesterday. This is evidently an association publication that comes out weekly or monthly. I'm not sure. It's dated January 12th. American Medical News. This is just to give you a little understanding of why we need to be considering some of the things that we are considering these days here in our Sunday school class. Page 9, self-help abortions. Women like Carol Downer hail this procedure as an alternative to traditional abortion for some women, but physicians and others condemn it as potentially unsafe. Now, I'm not going to go into all the detail. I'm not going to read this to you. But here in this page, there's a big article here, controversial abortion approach. And let me just read you. Here's this lady. She says, talking about your friends helping you perform the abortion at home. Says, you feel more support and you feel more control over it. It's not a doctor in front of you just doing it for the money. Your friends are doing it for you and they care about you. I think that it's wonderful to share the experience with my friends. Can you believe this? What are we coming to? I'll tell you. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The attitudes that people have today are really unbelievable to us. And I think that it's very possible for us to get so out of touch with what's going on in the world that we sometimes fail to understand the difficulty that some people have in believing what we do, or in believing what they do. I've been studying for this course that begins tomorrow in one of the books, a section on the difference between reason and faith. And this fellow makes the very pointed argument that reason and faith are enemies and they're irreconcilable. That just isn't true. That just is not true. And the world would have us to believe that faith is unreasonable. That faith means believing something that doesn't make sense or that can't be verified. A blind leap. I didn't know about this prevailing philosophy that is taught in a secular universities and that sort of thing until I was talking with my friend Mike Gallagher a few years ago and trying to witness to him about why I believe what I believe and what is the source of faith. Well, Mike is a Roman Catholic, and he has some faith in the Catholic system. He goes to church. Not church, but he goes to whatever that is they have. And he believes in it. And he does what they call praying. Okay, I mean, he practices this. He's not really devout, but that is what he's trusting. And so Mike and I were talking about faith, and he kept referring to the blind leap of faith. He kept using that phrase. I said, Mike, what do you mean by that? He said, I'm talking about faith. I said, Mike, that's not what I mean when I speak of faith. I'm talking about accepting God's revelation on faith. That is my number one presupposition. And once you give me that presupposition that God's word is true, then I reason from there. And I challenge you to find a hole in my logic after you grant me that point. He said, I'm not willing to grant you that point. He says, I don't come to my faith that simplistically. It's a blind leap of faith. You have to accept things that are unverifiable and accept things that cannot be challenged, accept things that cannot be proved. I said, Mike, that just isn't so. That just isn't so. That's the difference between a fundamentalist and other types of so-called Christians. You grant a fundamentalist that one point, that the Bible is what it claims to be, and then you'll not find a fault or flaw in his logic after that. I mean, if he's consistent and if he's honest. You got to grant him that one point. Well, the scientist says, well, I don't, that's not scientific. Oh, yes, it is. What is a scientific method? It begins with an hypothesis. It begins with a step of faith, and then it reasons from there. Only problem is the so-called science today, the science falsely so-called, is filled with holes of logic. All kinds of problems. All kinds of inconsistencies. And the problem is, those who disbelieve in the Lord, who disbelieve the Word of God today, are doing the same thing that they're accusing us of doing. And that is reasoning to their conclusion rather than reasoning from their conclusion. You understand what I mean by that? They've already got their minds made up, and now they're trying to find a way to demonstrate it or to prove it. They're starting with a prejudice against God, and now they're trying to verify it. And of course, they have the media, and they have the academic community, and they have all these other things on their side to demonstrate that. Now, you and I have got to keep our thinking straight. And one of the reasons that I want to present this material to you here is to help us to be able to keep our thinking straight in this wicked world. There's a twofold reason. That's one of them. And the other one, of course, is to be able to reach people. I don't think that you're going to reach people by trying to debate them on the level of these things we're talking about in this class right now. I don't think you're going to be able to convince, for example, a Buddhist to trust in Christ by studying Buddhism for the next 10 years. Okay? I've never been very interested in going into a lengthy, detailed study on the cults here. I don't think that's profitable. I think that the way that we deal with cultists is by knowing the truth very well. But at the same time, you have to understand a little bit about what a cultist believes in order to know what terms to define. For example, sometimes cultists and even liberals and sometimes outright unbelievers will use some of the same words that we use, but they mean something entirely different by those words. Just like the word faith. Mike and I had talked for over an hour about faith, trying to reach some level of communication. only to find out that we were talking about two totally different concepts, but we were using the same word. Now, what I want to do for you in this class, if possible, is present to you some words and give you a little bit of a definition about them so that you'll be able to understand where people are and what it is that they believe. Now, I don't know how many of these, if we have any more of these handouts or not, but I'm going to go over these terms here for just a few minutes. And remember, in Colossians chapter 2, the text that we saw there about being spoiled through philosophy and vain deceit, those are the ideas that we're dealing with here. Let's get a look at these terms then, these worldviews and the terms, okay? Remember what we saw first concerning monism. Now, some people know what monism is. Monism is a simple word. It's just two little syllables. You know what an ism is? Any type of ism is a position or a belief system or a tendency toward fundamentalism, modernism, liberalism. An ism is a theology or a position in the terms that we're using it today. Mon means one. Mono, one. Okay? You got that? Very simple little prefix there. So monism is a philosophy or a type of thinking that says everything is unified. Okay? It's very important for you to be aware of this. Now, we don't have to study all the history of it. In order to understand what's going on in the New Age movement, Western man has basically believed in the dualism of the universe. A spiritual realm and a physical realm. Good and evil. Dualism. Two principles. Okay? Monism believes that everything is unified. Everything is together. Everything is one. Okay? Now, only one ultimate substance or principle, reality as a whole, without independent parts. If we're talking about the mind, monism refers to the philosophy called idealism. Everything is together. Everything is unified. The idealism view. Have you ever used the phrase, well, he's just too idealistic? He's just, what have you meant when you use that word? How many of you have ever used that word? Somebody's idealistic. What do you mean when you use that word? He's not realistic. All right? What is idealistic versus realistic? Explain that to me a little bit. Sometimes we use words that we don't fully understand, don't we? Okay, or that we can't define. Yes, sir. Okay. All right. He's hopeful. He's idealistic. In other words, he believes that everything is going to be living up to the ideal. But at the same time, although that word refers to ideal, it also connects itself to a philosophy called idealism, which is a mental philosophy or a philosophy of mind that says that everything is one. Now, suppose that you're talking to somebody who holds that position, and you quote Romans 8:28 to them. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to to His purpose. You think you're quoting Scripture, and you are, and you think that you're teaching him a principle that you fully understand. But he may understand it in the way Bob Shuler teaches it. You see what I'm saying?
He doesn't hear the qualifier.
Yeah. In other words, he thinks, oh, you're teaching positive thinking. I was illustrating something at a men's retreat at Northland one time about the importance of follow-through. The importance of follow-through. And I use it, it's a little visual aid that we use sometimes. I don't do it anymore because of this particular instance I'm talking to you about. If you take a potato, and you line up four or five guys over here, and you hand all of them a potato. And then you give each one of them a plastic straw. And you tell them to stick the straw through the potato. And none of them can do it. But then you show them how to do it. And you show them the importance of concentrating on following through. Follow through with what you started. You made a decision, you've decided you're going to do something now, don't go about it half-hearted, and then quit as soon as you find out it's not going to work. Go ahead and follow through. That's the principle I was trying to illustrate. And so what you do is you just think that, you know, I'm going to put that strong, and it goes right through the potato. If you think follow through, like they teach you in karate and all those other kinds of things. And I showed the guys how to do it, and then one fellow came up and says, you know, that's tremendous. I've been trying to show my pastor the importance. Mind over matter, positive thinking. And I thought, forget that. Okay? Forget that illustration. But that's what he saw in it. You see what I'm... He thought positive thinking. Oh, you got to be positive. Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. Have you ever heard that? That old Napoleon Hill thinking and all that business. Sometimes we think we're communicating something to somebody in trying to teach them about the Lord, and we end up communicating something entirely different. Okay? Monism is one of the reasons for that. If matter, if we're looking at the world from a philosophical viewpoint, we tend toward idealism. If we're looking at it from a physical viewpoint, we tend toward materialism. We live in a materialistic society. In other words, if you can get things, then you've got what counts. You've got what matters. Now, the materialism of our society is a very low-class materialism. Okay? The philosophers who believed in materialism believed that physical matter is all that there was. The philosophers who believed in idealism believed that truth and ideals existed, but that matter and the visible world was only an illusion. You see? They failed to get practical. For example, you've heard this mathematical proposition. If you take two objects, okay, let's say me and Brian, right? Come here, Brian, okay? And the first step, stay right there, is that we cut the distance between us in half, okay? The next time, we cut the distance in half. And then we cut the distance in half again. And every step that we take toward each other, we reduce the distance between us by half. When will we eventually come in contact with each other? Theoretically.
Never.
Never. Practically.
Very soon.
Very soon. Okay. Why? Because, thank you. Because the theory fails to take into account the practical aspects of life. Now, see, the measurement is the problem. That so-called scientific method deals in absolutes that don't exist. Where are we measuring? If we measure the distance between us, are we measuring from the outermost atom to the outermost atom? You see what I'm saying? We are not measuring in the same sense that you and I are today. So they use theoretical things. They say the world is ideal, and that is an idealistic way of thinking. It's unrealistic. That's what we talked about a while ago. So a lot of people, not being able to understand those kinds of theories and those kinds of ideas, say, forget all that. I don't want to see the universe as being an illusion. I want to see it as solid matter. And they become what we call materialists. What all that really exists is the matter that we see. So those have been two different positions. And you'll find evidences of that in the New Age movement.
If I can't see it, I don't believe it.
If I can't see it, I don't believe it. That's a materialistic view. On the other hand, the idea that the ideal is achievable to every man. Okay? Achievable to everybody. Okay? You know, when we went down to Florida, I saw so much of this there at the Disney World thing. It was a fun time, and the kids had fun, but it was a little bit disappointing to me in some respects. I'm not sure we'll go again. The philosophies that we saw and the ideas and the things, there's a real education to us. I didn't see as much of this as I did last time because I hadn't done some of the studying the last time I was down there. But some of the philosophies. And everybody says, well, you know, Disney's changing. You know, the old Disney stuff was so good and wholesome and all that. Listen, let me tell you something. Just because it's a cute little animal doesn't mean that the lie is not there. I mean, you think about it now. It doesn't matter whether it's a PG-rated lie or a G-rated lie. It's still a lie. And the lie was there. I never saw the lie so clearly as I saw it this time. In the preparation for believing that the fantasy world is reality. And I hate to burst your bubble. I know I'm probably telling you there's no Santa Claus this morning, but let me tell you something. Old Walt Disney prepared the way for a lot of heathen belief through some of the stuff that he taught through the Mickey Mouse bit and all the rest of it. He really did. And I challenge you to think about some of those kinds of things and realize that just because it looks innocent. Now you say, well, what should we do? Should we bury our head in the sand and get out of the world? No. You should know what's going on so that you can impact this world. Don't be influenced by it. Influence it. Okay? Monism. Next word is dualism. You need to understand what dualism is. Now, monism says everything is one. Everything is unified. That is one of the basic presuppositions of Eastern religion. The Western religions are based on dualism. Dualism. Now, dualism is much more obvious in the universe. The fact that there are two principles. That there is good and evil, that there is mind and there is matter, there is right, there is wrong. You see what I'm saying? It's more obvious. And a lot more things are explained by dualism than are explained by monism. It's much easier to understand things if you see them in that way. Dualism says that there are two basic entities, mind and matter, that are separate from each other. If we're talking about dualism in philosophy, we say there is a physical realm and a spiritual realm. Okay? If we're talking about dualism in theology, we say there are two antagonistic principles, good and evil. Okay? Now, there's some elements of that in our thinking today. And Christianity is basically what you would call a dualistic philosophy. Now, that minimizes its truth, I know, when we say things like that, but that's basically what it is. Now, a third word that you need to understand is the word pluralism. Now, we talk about our pluralistic society today as though it were a good thing. And in a sense, it is. But it's becoming a weapon to use against Christianity. You need to know what that word is. We've talked about religious liberty here in America. Okay? And the word pluralism has been used to describe our society, even by some fundamentalists. I've heard fundamentalists say in recent years, well, you know, we have a pluralistic society. Therefore, Christianity ought to have the same rights as other religions. Whenever you hear the debate about whether the equal access law should be used to allow kids in public schools to have Bible clubs, you'll hear the word pluralism. You know, this is a pluralistic society. You need to know what this word means. Pluralism says that there are numerous entities or principles. If we're talking about sociology, and that is the sense in which most Christians use the word pluralism, the pluralism of American society, pluralism says there should be various ethnic, cultural, and religious groups which ought to be preserved. That everybody has his own identity and has a right to be left alone, has a right to be protected. Now again, if that's not kept in balance, it can very quickly become a tool of the devil. You've heard about the Genocide Treaty, which was recently passed by many nations, including our own. The Genocide Treaty says that it is morally outrageous for one nationality or ethnic group or religious community to seek to wipe out another. It was the Genocide Treaty was first written after World War II because the Nazis under Hitler tried to eliminate the Jews. That was wrong and morally outrageous and shouldn't have been tolerated by the free world, and it wasn't. So that war to depose Hitler was a right war, because he was doing something that was wrong. Now, 1990, let me tell you how that's being interpreted. It says that we cannot send Christian missionaries into an African nation that has a tribal religion and evangelize them, because to do so would be for one religious group to commit genocide against another religious group. You see how ridiculous it becomes after a while? The problem is that we fail to realize there are two guiding forces, I guess we could say, principles that help us in knowing what's right and wrong. When, as Christian people, we are guided by what we call the principial influences, and another is the prudential influences. Did you get that? If we live by principle, what do? Absolutely. Make all of our decisions in advance based on moral principles. I live by principle. This is right. This is what I'm going to do. Now, is that the way Christians are supposed to live? Yes. But there is also the prudential factor. Is it wise? Is it best? Let me give an illustration. We talked about Operation Rescue here a while back. There is a principial influence under which the people that are blockading abortion clinics are functioning. There is a principle. Abortion is wrong. And they say, I don't have to obey a trespassing law if there's somebody inside that fence that's being harmed. Illustration. You're walking past a house. There was a fence around it. It was closed. It said no trespassing on the sign. And you heard somebody screaming for help in the backyard. Help, help, he's drowning, help, I'm drowning, or something like that. Would you be guilty of trespassing if you jumped the fence and went back and saved that person under our law today? No, you would not. There's a principle there of a higher law. Saving life is more important than not trespassing. Okay? And that is the principle under which Operation Rescue is justified. And I think in principle, they're right. Another consideration, prudential. Let's suppose instead of walking by as a healthy person who can swim, and you hear somebody screaming, help, I'm drowning. Let's suppose that you're a paraplegic in a wheelchair. And all you can move is your thumb, and your electric wheelchair is going down the sidewalk, and you hear somebody screaming. Would it be prudential? Would it be prudent? Would it be wise for you to try to go back there in your wheelchair into that swimming pool and rescue that person? No, it would not. Now you got two drowning people. What should you do? Get help. Okay. Yeah, you can obey the principle, but you don't always have to obey the principle in the same way as everybody else would. Remember that. Remember that. It is not always wise for everybody to do exactly the same thing in obedience to a principle. There's the prudential factor. Is it wise? Is it best? Okay? Now, those are balancing factors that you and I have to consider. And sometimes we fail to do that. Christian people have a tendency to fail to think these things through. And they sometimes say, well, now, if you care, and they want to put it on that rhetorical level, if you believe in it, that abortion is murder, then you can't sit back and do nothing. You have to participate. No, you don't have to participate. You can fight in other ways. Listen, we can both be in the same war. You fight that soldier, and I'll fight this soldier. But sometimes we say, no, my soldier is the only enemy, and if you don't come over and fight him, then you're not in the war. You see? We all tend to do that from time to time. Okay, now, let's see. If we're talking about philosophy, philosophy says that reality has many explanations. We don't believe that. We do believe in the pluralism of society, but we don't believe in the pluralism of truth, do we? Okay? Now, let me show you some of the practical applications. You and I might get together with a fellow who is, let's say, all right, I'm an independent, fundamental, Bible-believing Baptist preacher. And for some circumstance, I find myself standing side by side in some function of society, if it's only in a bank line or whatever it might be, with a guy over here who's neo-Orthodox. Now, it won't be on our platform, I'll guarantee you that. It won't be on his either, okay? I won't be in those circumstances. But somewhere I find myself side by side with a neo-Orthodox man. We're communicating about something. I make the statement to him, you know, we do live in a pluralistic society. Okay? What do I mean by that? I mean that everybody's rights ought to be respected. I mean that you ought not take advantage or abuse or somehow undermine this particular ethnic or racial or religious group over here because he's an American. I don't think that the Jews have the truth about salvation. They have part of it. They don't have the part they need. I mean, they don't have all that they need. But on the other hand, as an American, I am for the Jewish people having the right to meet and practice their Judaism. Aren't you? I don't think that the Roman Catholics have the truth of salvation. But I am not for a law that says they cannot exist in America. I'm not for that. Because we live in a pluralistic society. I think a person who claims to be an atheist is a fool. I really do. But I think as an American, a person ought to have a right to be a fool. Okay? That's pluralism. I believe in that. And if I say to this neo-Orthodox guy, we live in a pluralistic society, and then he turns to me and says, yes, indeed we do. What does he mean? There's no real one truth. Well, you know, there are many roads to heaven. My wife and I sat in the funeral of an uncle of hers one time as a United Methodist preacher got up and read from John chapter 14. Turn to that. And I want to show you the verses that he read. And the problem was not in the verses that he read. The problem was in the verses that he didn't read. Let me show you how a neo-Orthodox thinks. He was comforting them. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. Huh? Pluralism? Hey, how about religious pluralism? In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there may ye may be also. And whither I go, ye know, and the way ye know. And from those verses, he began to proceed to say that there's room in heaven for everyone. My Father's house are many mansions. And he made this statement, well, you know, there are many roads to Jerusalem. True. But there are not many ways to be saved.
Just because there are many roads to Jerusalem doesn't mean you can get saved in a variety of ways. Okay? And that's a false application. What he did not read was verse 6. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. And I thought I was going to have to restrain myself to keep from pointing that out during the service. Boy, that was frustrating. Now, look, same passage of Scripture. He was reading from the King James. But he taught a lie. Why? Because he believes a lie. He didn't understand this. Listen, you and I need to realize that sometimes we can communicate with people, and we can use the same terms and mean two totally different things. Pluralism in society is a good thing. Pluralism in religion, pluralism of doctrine, pluralism of philosophy is a lie. Understand that? Yes, sir. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Boy, that is the truth. You talk to a Mormon, and you'll find him using some of the exact same terms that we do, and he means something completely different. That's a perfect illustration of it, John. Because you'll think that the next thing you know, you'll say, "Well, now, brother," you know, and you'll start thinking, "Boy, I mean, he's already got me duped here," you know. And here we are talking to him as though he were a Christian or something, you know. And listen, that kind of thing is happening. It's already happening. I mean, we have Jerry Falwell referring to our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters in Christ. You know, he's using that term. Now, you think about it for a few minutes. And if that's the case, then why should we try to evangelize them? Why should we try to win them? Okay. Now, there are a few other terms I want you to understand so we can get into this New Age thing. Let's talk about theism. The word theism refers primarily to monotheism. Monotheism and theism might as well be synonyms. Theism means belief in God through revelation. If a person is theistic, then they believe in the existence of God and that God is revealed to us. Monotheism is the same thing. We refer to the religion of the Hebrews as monotheism. How many of you have heard the word the Judeo-Christian ethic? What is the Judeo-Christian ethic?
Typically the Old Testament set of Ten Commandments.
Basically, it's the Ten Commandments. It is a belief in one God who has revealed himself in the Bible and required us to do 10 things. That's basically what it means. Okay? And I'll tell you, if we did those 10 things, everything else would be all right. Okay? But we don't.
I got a question.
All right?
Would Islam fit into that?
Islam is monotheistic. Yes, it is. The great religions, they call them, of the world. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. That's what's going on in the Middle East right now. You see, there is a similarity of philosophy, but there are wide divergences. When you hear on the news that the Arabs and the Christians are fighting, or the Arabs and the Jews, are these guys like evangelicals? Is that what we're talking about? The Christians in Beirut? Are these guys, you know, what are they, Southern Baptists or Presbyterians? What are they when they call them Christians? Yeah, it means they're not Muslim. They're the kind of Christians that Constantine was, okay? I mean, it's a political expediency is all it is. It means they're non-Muslims and they're non-Jews. Yes, sir? Right. Yeah, that's right. That's typical. Okay, so when we speak of someone being a theist, now you need to understand the difference between theism and deism. I know we talked about this back before the holidays. A lot of times Christian people tend to be a little bit gullible, I think, especially in the 70s. There was a big move toward rewriting American history and talking about what a wonderful fundamentalist all of our founding fathers were, like Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin's appeal to believing in the deity and these kinds of things. And Thomas Jefferson. And I've heard people make Thomas Jefferson out to be a great and wonderful believer. Let me tell you something. If Thomas Jefferson were alive today, he would be Ted Kennedy's best buddy. Okay? They believe the same things. Okay? And I respect some of the things a man did. I mean, you know, the Constitution of the United States is a tremendous document. And he wrote it. But his theology was deism. Deism is belief in God through reason. not revelation. You see the difference? Now, I know these definitions I'm giving you are so simplistic it's almost insulting to those of you who've really studied this. But I'm trying to give you a simple definition that'll help you. The difference between theism and deism is revelation versus reason. Now, which of those two people, for example, if you find somebody today that says, I believe in God, you still don't know what he means. He may be theistic or he may be deistic. A person says, well, I believe in God. Why? Because when he was a boy, he was taken to Sunday school and he was taught the Bible, and he knows there's a God because somebody taught him some truth from the Word. That's revelation. Or he may have never even heard anything from the Bible, but somebody that knew the Bible taught him some things about the Bible. That's revelation. And that man is close to help. But you see a man that says, well, I believe in God. Why? Well, there has to be a God. He's coming from a totally different view. You see that? There has to be a God. Why? Well, there just has to be. He's trying to discover God through reason. The deist is far more vulnerable to error, in my view, than the theist is. Okay? Yes, sir. Sure. Absolutely. But you have to know. Now, Paul did this in the book of Acts. Okay? For example, when he talked to Agrippa, he persuaded him from the Old Testament. But when he talked to the Greeks on Mars Hill, those people were not theists, they were deists. He spoke to them of the unknown God. You see? He understood where they were and where they were coming from and what they could know, and then he communicated truth to them in the way they could understand it. This is why it's important for you and for me to know these things. Now, I'd like to give you a definition now of some other words about unbelief. And some of these are going to be a little bit subjective. You know what I mean by that? These are my definitions. I mean, okay. All right. Atheism is a fellow who denies God's existence. I've told you about this book I had to read for this class I have Dr. Salter this week. Atheism, The Case Against God by a fellow named George Smith. And in there he says that atheism is not a denial of God's existence, but an absence of belief in God. That's not true. That's agnosticism. And he says that's atheism. Atheism means no theism, no belief in God. That is not true. That's a straw man definition. And he argues from it, and his whole argument is invalid because he starts with a bad definition. You find a person today that tells you they're an atheist, they may or may not know what they're talking about. They think, I'm an atheist, and what they mean by that is, well, I don't believe in God because I see no reason to believe in God. That's not atheism, that's agnosticism. Agnosticism is sort of like ah-deism. An agnostic denies revelation and awaits rational proof. An atheist is a person who denies God's existence. He's like Psalm 14:1. The fool hath said in his heart, no God. You go back and read that. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. The words there is are in italics. The idea is not that God does not exist, but God will not tell me what to do. And that is at the heart of the person who claims to disbelieve in God. A person who is in active fighting against God is a person with a rebellion problem, not a belief problem. You see? And sometimes you'll find people today who will tell you they don't believe in God, but you can tell by the way they're living that their problem is they do believe in God, but they will not submit to God. You see? And almost everyone who claims not to believe in God today through revelation is a person who will not submit rather than a person who cannot believe. Now, on the other hand, you'll find some people who have been taught so many lies that it's very hard for them to believe. They don't understand why we have to believe that God created the world. They were taught evolution as a fact. They believe it because they were taught it. And they don't understand what the big deal is all about. My brother-in-law asked me one time, I don't understand why evolution and Christianity can't have a peaceful coexistence. I said, well, Johnny, let me explain it to you. And after I explained it to him, he said, well, you know, that makes sense. I understand now. You need to choose one or the other. Several years back, there was a big movement called theistic evolution, which is one of the most contradictory positions in the world. But a group of theologians said, well, maybe these scientists have some truth now that will help us. They've discovered how God might have created the world. That certainly explains a lot of things, but it introduced more problems than it explained, you see. So, there are some other terms that you may come across in your reading if you study on this some. There'll be the word free thinking. Somebody says, well, I'm a free thinker. If you study American history, you'll see this word an awful lot. Basically, that is a more recent term for deist. You see a person today who says, well, I'm a free thinker. He is, maybe he belongs to the Libertarian Party, or, you know, he subscribes to, what's Mencken's old magazine? What is it? Can't remember it. H.L. Mencken started publishing a magazine back in the 30s, and it's still being printed today. I can't remember, but you know, some of those people, they think of themselves as free thinkers. Well, I'm a free thinker. If you hear that term, they are basically the same thing that Franklin and Jefferson and those guys would have been, as they call themselves deists. Okay? Then there's an unbeliever. That's a term that believers use. What kind of believers? Believers in what?
Take a choice.
Believers in anything. All right, now, an infidel refers to subjective regional unbelief. An unbeliever is a person who doesn't believe whatever you're talking about at the time. But an infidel is a person who's on the outside when you're on the inside. The Muslims use the word infidel, just like we do. We would refer to a person who had been exposed to and rejected Christianity as an infidel. The Muslims would refer to you and me as infidels. Yes, sir.
Is infidel the same thing as an apostate?
An infidel and an apostate are similar. But an infidel refers to a person who has rejected it. An apostate refers to a person who has been in it and rejected it. Okay? An infidel may not be a person who ever got in the movement or who ever believed it. But you need to understand these terms a little bit. We are referred to as infidels by the Muslims today. Okay? All right. Two or three more terms for today. One is polytheism. Polytheism is belief in many gods. Many of the Eastern religions, particularly the islanders, are polytheistic. Now, the ancient Greeks were polytheistic, and the Romans were polytheistic. They believed in the pantheon of gods. In Greece, it would have been who? Zeus? All right, in Rome, who was it?
Jupiter.
Okay? And, you know, all the different gods, and of course, many of the signs of the zodiac are based on them. And then, even in everyday life, for example, we refer to the third day of the week as Wednesday, or that'd be the fourth day of the week as Wednesday. The word Wednesday gets its name from the Norse god Woden. Woden's day. You see, that was their Sabbath. So it influences our culture in ways that we don't even realize, this belief in polytheism, okay? Polytheism means a belief in many gods. Now, here's another word, and you have to have all this other stuff we talked about to be able to understand this word. Pantheism. American society is very quickly becoming pantheistic. Pantheism and polytheism are different in this respect. Whereas polytheism says there are many gods, pantheism says that God is not a person, that all forces are God. The idea of the collective intelligence of the universe, that's God. All right? If God is in everything, and God is everything, where does that leave you and me? Yeah, we're part of it. We're part of it. In other words, if God is just all of the intelligence in the universe, then you got a part of it too, don't you? Inner man is divine. Yeah. Now, you go to somebody and you start talking about the principle of Christ in you, the hope of glory, and the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. That can very quickly move through the liberal thinking of the so-called divine spark that's in man into the New Age movement. The entire thing. I'll tell you about some things we saw in Florida. Saw a little clip of a cartoon. Here's Cinderella. She's leaning over, crying against a bench. Oh, she said, what is there left to believe in? And the fairy godmother appears and says, oh, come now. You can't have lost all your faith. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Huh? Oh, that's a safe little G-rated cartoon, isn't it? And now they get this blasphemous thing called Captain EO, which is basically a music video with Michael Jackson in it. Okay? Why EO? May I make a suggestion? Everyone? everyone has the potential? Now, I went to see that for a reason. I went to see it because I wanted to see what philosophy was being taught. And having studied this thing in the New Age movement, I'm here to tell you, don't go see it, okay? Now, what I saw as I watched the people, they were fascinated, lasers. They were fascinated with the music. They were fascinated with the technology. And the technology was mind-boggling. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But the philosophy, it was as clear a presentation of the New Age gospel as I have ever seen in my life. The clearest. I watched for some other things. And then I found out, you know who produced that thing? A fellow named George Lucas. George Lucas. You recognize that name? Ben Franklin, not the Ben Franklin that we've been talking about earlier, but our Ben Franklin, who is a member of our church here, gave me a tape on mythology. And it was a presentation of some philosopher from some school in California where he was talking about the importance of having myths and how myths changed us and how believing in something above and beyond ourselves affected all of us. And this guy was on there talking about how, whether that myth be Japanese or Chinese or any of the traditional Eastern religions, or whether it be the Western tradition of the monotheistic beliefs of Islam and Judaism and Christianity, all of these helped man to reach out of himself and realize his potential and become what he ought to be and all this kind of stuff. Inner man is divine. And I sat there and watched that thing and studied that thing and saw what he was presenting. And then I wanted to say, well, who are these people and who produced this? It was something that Ben had taped off public television. And it got down to the bottom and it said, produced by a grant from the so-and-so, so-and-so Lucas Foundation, a production of Lucas Films. And there was Lucas again and again. Let me tell you something. George Lucas is an evangelist for the New Age movement. And if you don't think so, you need to think again. His greatest presentation of his gospel were three movies that we've talked about in this class before called Star Wars. In Star Wars, the predominant theory is the Force. The Force. That is pantheism. That is the New Age movement. That's what it's all about. The idea that there is a force in the universe. Now, I want to leave with a testimony. I've told you about my friend Mike Gallagher. Let me give these other two terms here real quick before I use this. Theology. You know what theology is? The study of God. But theosophy is something different. Theosophy refers to the knowledge of divine things. It's different from theology, which is about God. As in Buddhism, theology seeks to know what God knows. Theology wants to know about God. Theosophy wants to know what God knows. The theosophy has been prevalent in American society, say in the mid-1800s, in the lives of Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson, in a movement called Transcendentalism. You ever studied any of those things? And today, the Transcendental Meditation, all of those things came out. It's basically theosophy. And it is similar to the Eastern religions and that believes in meditation. I'm thinking of astral projection. You know what astral projection is? It's taking the soul of a man and projecting it. And they believe in, and again, they'll use biblical terms. They believe that you can project your soul during dreams. That's called astral projection. That your soul is fastened to your body at the navel by the silver cord. And that the aura around you, which some people claim to be able to see through what they call the third eye, the little dot that you see on the Indians and so on. All right, that's what that symbolizes, that they have been enlightened, okay? And the aura is called the golden bowl. You recognize those terms? From Proverbs, the silver cord be severed and the golden bowl be broken. And they take those things, and the next thing you know, here it is. There it is. There's more evidence. See, God is revealing himself. And there's the Baha'i business of, you know, God revealing himself through all these prophets. Okay? And they believe. Now, you're seeing this in a lot of media presentations today, a lot of flying. A lot of deliverance, a lot of people, you know, soaring through the air and all these kinds of, and a lot of fantasies, and all of that business, the old Superman concept. All right, all these philosophies that have influenced us are just ancient lies of alternatives to God's truth. But I want to tell you about this thing on pantheism. My friend, Mike Gallagher, and I unbelievers. I was not a Christian. I had rejected the Methodism with which I had been in which I had been raised. We were lying there in our bunks as freshmen in college, 1966. And there we were discussing the nature of the universe. Well, what is there really? Well, I mean, you know, we'd already rejected God, okay? Never would have occurred to us to open a Bible because we knew that was a dusty old book that old prudes carried around and troublemakers, and so that wasn't where it was. We had to find truth for ourselves. And we sat there, and through our own human reasoning, we figured it out. We figured that the universe was just all one big thing. And that we were, our planets were probably just atoms in some molecule of some larger universe. And that the atoms of our universe were probably just the universes of some subatomic worlds. And all this kind of, and we thought this was our idea, that we came up with this. We really did. And we decided that God was really the collective intelligence of the universe. And that we got a little piece of it and it was our responsibility to perfect it and make it better. Okay? And that when we got finished with it, then our intelligence would go back into the intelligence pool. And we were so proud of ourselves for coming up with this. And we thought, we figured it out. We have figured it out. And we run around and try to tell some of our friends about it. And over the next few years, I got involved in a few things. I got involved in theosophy and a few other things. I read almost 20 books about the country of Tibet, just trying to understand this better. Now, God reveals himself to man, doesn't he? I want to tell you something, friend. The devil reveals himself to man too. How is it that we, sitting there in our, or lying there in our dormitory room, could develop through our own human thinking exactly the same philosophy of the New Age movement today? How is that? How could that be? The devil's in control of the natural mind. He's got a lie. And I'll tell you, if what you want to do is sit down and by reasoning figure out God, you better be careful because you might figure out something you didn't plan on. The devil duped us into believing the same old lie that he's got George Lucas believing, that he's got 1,000 other leaders today believing, and most people in society. And America is going to be ready to believe this lie. You see? Why? Because it explains a lot of things from the rational standpoint. That's why I talked a while ago about deism and the danger of deism. And a lot of Christians played into that thing back in the 70s when we talked about how we ought to listen to Ben Franklin, how we ought to listen to Thomas Jefferson, get back to our roots and our founding fathers. Better be careful. Those guys believe some of the same things that lead to this lie. See what I'm saying? Now, you and I need to understand this. We're going to talk a little bit about the New Age movement for the next 2 or 3 weeks. We're going to identify it. We're going to talk about some ways that you can recognize it and the ways that you can help rescue people from it. I've got a little overhead here. Let's make sure that we've got enough of these for next week. Whoever helps me with that. This overhead right here. I want everybody to have one of these next week as we talk about the secular humanist, New Age, and Christian worldviews. And we'll get those together and we'll fill out those blanks in the next week or two. Okay? All right. Time is gone. Okay? Let's stand and be dismissed.